Welcome to...
Hey.
Great Shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Crack Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. On today's show, we have another edition of The Deciding Point, our breakdown of everything happening in the Division I college tennis world. Of course, this podcast going to be our penultimate edition of the show, breaking down all things national indoor championships, as our 2024 men's championship match is now officially set. It will be top-seeded Ohio State taking on second-seeded and two-time defending indoor champions TCU. On today's podcast, what we want to do for all of you college tennis fans tuning in is break down how we've reached this championship Monday, recap each of our semifinals from Sunday, both of them, yes, a little bit lopsided from a 30,000-foot view scoreline, but once we dive into the details, as we will on today's show, all of you will understand just how compelling Sunday's action was here at the Milstein Family Tennis Center. And joining me on the podcast to help break it all down is the same man who has joined me each and every night throughout the course of these 2024 National Indoor Championships. Of course, he also joins me each and every week as my co-host on these episodes of The Deciding Point, as he and you all know him, excuse me, of course, as the forefather of the College Tennis Ranks Formula Predictions, never far from the listed UTR, one of the many dames to root for the Liberty Flames. Now, of course, a lean, mean Michigan Wolverine, the man I know as the professor. It's Chris Helioris. Chris, hey, great shot. Welcome to the show, my friend. Semifinal Sunday in the books. Our championship match is set. How are you feeling as we look at our final match of this event?
Feeling great. It's exactly what we expected to get. You kind of like the years when you get what you expect in the final. We're getting the two best teams for indoors. There's no doubt to meet in the finals, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Again, it's been about a decade since we've seen a team reach three consecutive national indoor finals. The USC Trojans actually did it from 2013 to 2015. And I'm thinking back, I'm like, could I do a single player on those teams? Of course, I can. Sarmiento, Hanfman, Quiroz. It's starting to occur to me now that they actually won the NCAA title in 2014. Of course, the 2013 team was the first post Stevie DeWitt hangover squad that lost to eventual national champions Virginia. But the point is, it's been about a decade since we've seen a team make three consecutive finals, and that statement is a testament to how impressive it is that TCU has accomplished that fact. On the other side of the equation, though, Buckeyes looked like a well-oiled machine today, and again, success these past three seasons, January, February, the resumes the Buckeyes have put together, this feels like a crowning moment for this particular iteration of the Ohio State men's tennis program, as this group has done everything but reach a national champion, capture a national championship, albeit at the ITA National Indoors or the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, the scene is set. It is going to be a phenomenal championship Monday. And of course, on today's show, we want to break down our semifinals in depth in case you missed out on any of our action, recap everything we saw unfold over the last 6.5 hours here at the Milstein Family Tennis Center. That, of course, starts with Virginia, Ohio State. This rivalry has meant everything. And for the Buckeyes to overcome this particular Virginia program, two-time defending national champions, Virginia as well, it's not just that they got the win, it's how they got the win, right? And I think first and foremost, we have to talk about the ending of doubles. A couple of lopsided sets, Hopper and Graziani seemingly almost out of nowhere, dominant today over a Cannon Kingsley and JJ Tracy pairing that had lost just two games entering this semifinal round at the top spot. Finally, Andrew Luchanik, Justin Boulay seem to find their footing. They ride one break all the way to a 6-4 set. Then we had the drama of number three doubles. And the single most significant lineup change made on the day was Iñaki Montez inserted into the doubles lineup, the senior who is the beating heart of these University of Virginia Cavaliers. I'm sure he went to Coach Pedroso. I'm sure he went to Trett Huey. I'm sure he went to Brian Rasmussen and said, hey, I'm playing today. Like, just look. You're not keeping me off the court. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I just won a singles match in the quarters, serving underhand. Doubles might be a little bit more difficult tactically, but you just can't leave me out of this semifinal match against the Bucks. And obviously, the case he made was awfully compelling. He's inserted into the lineup. By the way, he and freshman Dylan Dietrich had break leads at multiple points against Robert Cash and Alex Bernard, their opponents. And for the third consecutive match, it came down to Robert Cash in the doubles point for the Buckeyes. For the first time over the course of the weekend, Robert Cash delivers, and the Buckeyes take the doubles point. And look, the tactics of playing doubles against someone serving underhand, the fact that at times Robert Cash would serve in volley while Alex Bernard actually stayed back on Cash's serves, so many different fascinating tactical wrinkles. But Chris Halioris, when we look back at this match, what, 3 months from now, whenever it is that these two teams ultimately end up facing off against one another once again, we will all remember what happened at the start of that deciding breaker on the number three doubles point. Very first point, ball is hit onto the baseline. I forget if it was Bernie or Cash who hit it. Dylan Dietrich calls the ball out. Chair umpire confirms the out call, and head coach Andreas Pedroso overrules both the chair and his players. It cedes the point to the Buckeyes. They never looked back in that deciding breaker. 7-6 decision to clinch the 1-0 lead for Ohio State. And look, big picture, by the way, and I feel so much better about these 3 minutes. Hopefully Westhoff will find an ability to edit out all that came before that 5.5 minute mark. But more broadly, Chris, it was a doubles point Ohio State had to have just from a confidence boosting perspective to, you know, start to tell yourself, hey, we believe we can beat this Virginia squad that has the MO, has the cachet of a 2-time defending NCAA champion. Ohio State had to have the doubles. And for Coach Pedroso to offer up, dare I say, that sort of gift to the Buckeyes to start the breaker, first of all, talk about mortal fortitude. Talk about moral clarity. And just for Andreas Pedroso to do that, the amount of texts I received from coaches, pundits like us in this business, heaping praise onto Andreas for doing that in that moment. David Roditi came up to me immediately after the match and said, if you don't lead the podcast by complimenting Andreas, I will find you tomorrow, because for years, Coach Roditi has been pleading for coaches to make those sort of overrules. Hell, Roditi's the only coach other than Andreas Pedroso I've ever seen actually go out and overrule their player. We all would like to think that in a moment like that, we would rise to the occasion, do, dare I say, the quote unquote right thing. And, you know, again, if an overrule was justified, make that decision. No chance any of us actually would. Like, again, I had conversations with coaches like, you think I'm going to overrule my team, like semifinals of a national championship, you know, against the number one ranked team in the country when I know we need every edge we can get? What a moment. What a doubles point. What a way to start the day. I apologize for the lengthy monologue there, Chris. Your reaction to everything we saw through that first doubles point, the overrule, all of it, because boy, was it a tone setter.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were two things there, obviously. One is the overrule from Pedroso, which is, I mean, outstanding. Obviously, in hindsight, everyone's going to credit him for it. But, you know, I'll go back to my bringing my nephew up in the early days through the junior tennis, saying I would do the exact same thing. If I see you hook somebody on the court, I will walk out there and overrule the call, and I will default you in the match. And like, there's just no, you know, that's what the coaches need to do. And the fact that he would do it on such a big stage is just amazing. Makes him just hands down immediately one of my favorite guys when that happened. Now, on the other hand, the fact that you're going to play a guy, and it almost worked, but you're going to play a guy serving underhanded. I wouldn't play Novak Djokovic serving underhand in doubles in college. It's just not going to happen. Like, the serve, like a power, you don't need a power serve in doubles. It's more about placement than it is power. But when you're hitting a forehand, you can't even really place it that well. I think that's just, that was crazy ballsy. And it almost worked. Like you said, they had break leads and they just didn't make it stick. I think that was just a crazy ballsy decision. And the way they played, it was probably the right one. I mean, I'll give them credit. I thought initially, there's no way, this is ridiculous. You can't do it. And they made it look good. I will say on the flip side, when you said Ohio State had to have the doubles, I actually, given the way it ended, and I kind of thought we might end this way after the doubles point, I really, really, really wish Virginia had taken that doubles point, because had they, we would have definitely probably been in for a long 4-3 match. You know, it's 4-0 on the scoreboard, but every other match looked like it had Virginia written on it. And this could have been, you know, this would have been great to come down scoreboard wise had it not gone that way. But yeah, that's all my thoughts on the doubles.
That's a really good point by you. A couple of things there. Like I agree with you that for the long-term perspective of the match, had Virginia taken the doubles and taken that 1-0 lead and all the rest of the singles unfold accordingly, you're absolutely right. We would have had a 3-1 scenario with what? Third set for Odesh, third set for Von der Schulenberg, like would have had to have been both played out. The third set for Dietrich Boulay as well. That would have been delightful from a drama perspective. But I stand by my point of mentally, I think Ohio State had to have that doubles point. Because if you lose not just the doubles point to Virginia, it would have been their fourth consecutive doubles point dropped, Chris, for an Ohio State team that doesn't drop four doubles points in a season, let alone four consecutively. Would have been a fourth consecutive doubles point dropped. And then there's just the other little dagger into the side of your chest. If you're an Ohio State fan, you would have lost a double set to a guy who was serving underhand. Like that at this level, I know it's easy for us to say in the broadcast booth, but at this level, that would have been unacceptable. Like we said it in our preview last night. If you lose to an underhand serving in Yaki Montez, you do not deserve to beat this Virginia team. And this is where I have to give all the credit in the world to Robert Cash, Alex Bernard, and the Ohio State coaching staff, who were riding this number three doubles team after every single point. Ty had something to say. Pro had something to say. Torp was just there fist pumping, doing his thing, and that's why he's the perfect complement to, again, the Tucker Crow coaching staff that has had all of this success. But they were calling the plays individually, Chris. They were calling, hey, Robert, you're going to serve in volley while Bernie actually stays back. Bernie, hit your forehand. Just like all these different things, right? It was very clear that they were taking an active role and trying to problem solve their way through that tiebreak. And that's why I think had Ohio State lost it, look, they probably still would have won the match, because 3-1 decision with three third setters on, give me the team that just needs to win one of those three set matches. But the mental edge of getting through that doubles, when you were down breaks early, when you, again, like, have lost to this Virginia team in the NCAA final, and you know Tournament Virginia is just a different beast. By the way, Tournament Virginia took the doubles point in last year's NCAA final over the Bucks, and it just felt like the Bucks never recovered from there. Credit to Robert Cash, man. Like, if he would have gone 0-3 in those clinching double sets for a guy who I have come onto this podcast and said, I think he's one of the 50 best doubles players, not in the college country, no, 50 best doubles players in the world, it would have been an abject disaster. And not only did they avoid that, they went out and took that third set, that breaker, excuse me, in a way that had you thinking, like, sorry for swearing again, where the f*** was that through the first 35 minutes, 45 minutes of that set? Because, man, once you figured out what you wanted to do, life got real easy. Robert Cash started spiking everything in sight. Birdie was dipping things low, setting him up perfectly. Now, again, oh my God, you have to give credit to Iñaki Montes, who was poaching like a madman, and his energy is what got the Hoos to that breaker at the three double spot. Ultimately, I know he's serving underhand. I think it was the right decision to play him, but I know that's a long rant on the doubles point for what was clearly, in my opinion, the most significant point of the match, because you're just not going to find four singles points against the Buckeyes indoors. Chris Alios, any counters to my counter, to your counter?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's valid. It's just in the end, to me, it's all just unfortunate. And I think when we get to May, I have no doubts that we will probably see this matchup again. I hope we see this matchup again in the NCAA tournament, and that it's under different circumstances with a fully healthy serving Iñaki Montes. It's just, you know, they were under the gun. They didn't have a lot of choices, and they did what they had to do. And it's just unfortunate where they were.
Yeah, it's well said. But, you know, again, if you are this Virginia team that has not played Iñaki Montes once in doubles this season, like Rodesh and Von der Schulenburg go 1-2 overall on the weekend. They looked fine as a number one doubles pairing, like a 7-6 loss, a 6-4 loss that featured one break. That's going to happen at the number one double spot. For Hopper and Graziani to bounce back the way they did today at 2 over
that
Kingsley
was totally
and Tracy.
Unexpected.
The most unexpected result of the entire day, perhaps, any result we saw in our semifinal. There's a lot to build on for the Hoos in doubles moving forward. And again, I don't know if we've talked about it enough. Andreas overruled this player to start a deciding breaker. And again, I know I'm repeating myself here. You like to think you'd have the moral clarity, the fortitude, the confidence of self, the confidence of your team to make a decision like that and hope it doesn't impact anything moving forward. I just think it did. I thought the vibes were off for Virginia for the rest of that breaker. Montes got overruled again on an ace wide as well. It's just like it all started to break the way of the Buckeyes from there. And look, what we saw from Ohio State in singles today was nothing short of extraordinary. They flexed their depth on us once again. And right now, your most outstanding player for Ohio State, should they win tomorrow, it's Alex Bernard. He's dropped 7 games, Chris. 7 games in 6 sets of tennis. Do the math there. You don't have to be the professor, Chris Alioris, to know that's 1 and 1/7, right? Games per set. Like, or 1 and 1/6, excuse me, games per set. That's crazy. That's part one.
I'm gonna say, Ruskin, you'd have to go back several episodes, right, to catch this clip from me. And I said it then. I stand by it now, which is why I think they are clearly the favorite right now. There is not a single team in the country outside of Ohio State where I could make the statement I made. I said it then, I'll say it now. You let me play Alex Bernard 1 through 6. I will play that team against anyone in the country, and I'm confident I win. You give me the doubles point. You let me play Bernie 1 through 6. He wins 3 of those matches at all 6 positions against every single team in the country. Because I'll tell you what, he's not losing a single point at 6. He's not losing a single point at 5. There are a few teams that will push him at 4, but when
Inverse
he does...
Inverse Schulenburg would be fun. Yeah,
exactly. That's the team that comes closest to pushing that is Virginia. But, you know,
or
what?
In theory,
find a way to win 1 of the other 3 in that case.
In theory, if Texas wakes up, like PY versus him would be fun. But like, it's not a horrible take by you.
He's there's nobody else. Like, are you going to make that argument with Juracek? No. Are you going to make that argument with Harper or Braswell for Texas? No. Like, you're not saying
I'd watch the Gorsy Bernie match.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying if I ask you to make that argument for the number 6 player for any of those teams,
for sure,
you play
for
the
sure.
6 player 1 through 6. No, there's not another team in the country that you'll take the 6 guy and say, I'll play him 1 through 6 and I'll bet you he wins 3 matches every time. I'll take that bet with Bernie.
I would do 6 Steigleners just to see what happens. Like, again, like how good
he
is this guy?
He didn't beat Arizona State number 9.
6
Come on.
Will Cooksies at the National Indoors has a shot versus anyone because he's big match
Stop.
Will.
Neither one of them could beat the 8 and 9 from Arizona State today. Just stop now.
6. I'm just 6 Valdemar Papes so I could just be Team Valdemar. Like, that's kind of sick. Yeah, it's really well said. And look, Tracy clinches over Inyaki in a match that was exactly what we thought it would be, Chris Halioris. But the biggest thing to me about the Buckeyes this week, it hasn't been Cannon, who was great against Rodesh. That match was as good as advertised. Two guys who should be the guy in that conversation all year long. You know, oh my God, Dylan Dietrich, you have our attention. He is that good. And to see Boulay have to dig the way he did to force a third and Anthrop versus Von der Schulenburg, they were all excellent matches. But Robert Cash is the story right now at the number five spot, because this is a guy who for 5 years has just been in and out of the Ohio State singles lineup. And I get indoors, he's going to have a benefit of the doubt in the way outdoors he still probably has to earn in the mind of a lot of college tennis fans. But, you know, again, the, oh, Buckeyes are stacking by playing Bernie at six right now. Like, that argument doesn't hold a lot of weight with me, because Cash is 3-0 on the weekend. He's delivered two clinches for the Buckeyes in their first two matches, and now a straight set win over Alex Kiefer at the number five spot, which on the broadcast, that was the one I kept pointing to. Can Kiefer find another gear? Kiefer's always the guy who seems to force that uncomfortable third set for the Who's opponents. And Cash just never allowed him to breathe. Big serves, big forehands. He gets forward with such decisiveness. Today, again, Bobby Cash, dinner, like, people better be buying him shots at the bar, non-alcoholic because he's got to play tomorrow. But whatever it is they can do to celebrate Bobby Cash's semifinal Sunday, he is the team MVP today. I mean, to clinch in doubles where he was clearly the emotional leader, he was the most aggressive player, and then to get a straight set win, not a three set, a straight set win that was kind of the nail in the coffin, given Montez had to serve underhand today at three. He's the guy I turn to as my MVP of the Buckeye performance. But again, it was a sweep. It was a different 4-0 than their 4-0 in Columbus a couple of weeks ago. But there was no doubt, start to finish, Ohio State was the better team. And Chris Halioris, they finished the job in this match, deserving national indoor finalists. Any final thoughts on this on either end, either for Ohio State or Virginia?
So both ends. You said something that and I was thinking about this beforehand, before we started recording, how I was going to say this. And I'll say it this way. I think this is the year, and we're going to see if this is the year, but I think this is the year that Ty has set himself up to the point where I don't think you pull Robbie Cash when we get outdoors anymore. And if you leave your lineup as it is, and nobody, we can all look at it and go, yeah, once we go outdoors, like, Bernie has to move up, but there's nothing that says Ty has to move him up. Let's say that they go outdoors and they play this exact same lineup. They are going to win 90% of their points in doubles. They're going to win 99% of the points at number six with Bernie. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And Cash is still just fine. They're up 2-0 before they get going, and they're going to find two more. I think it's a beautiful recipe for them to set up if they don't go messing around. Now, are they going to go messing around and start bringing Nakashima into the singles lineup when we get outdoors? I don't know, but in my mind, this is a great setup to leave it exactly as is and allow yourself the luxury of playing Bernie at six outdoors. When he's not even giving up games indoors, and he's better outdoors than he is indoors. It's ridiculous. On the flip side, though, I do want to say we've talked a lot about Ohio State here. The one overriding thought I had this entire match was, look, if we had a healthy Montez, I don't know where doubles was going. But even if you give Ohio State the doubles, let's say we get a healthy Inyaki and Inyaki can win his match. We have three matches that actually looked pretty good for Virginia when we finished with Rodesh, Von der Schulenburg up a break, and the match at two with Dietrich. I mean, it's, yes, on the scoreboard, it's 4-0, but I'm all in on the fact that when we come to May, I might still pick Virginia. I don't know. Like, that, it is there. They don't need to come out of this feeling bad in the least.
Yes. Yeah. No, two follow-ups on that, but quickly, just It's the only time he's ever made a funny joke, so I want to give a shout-out to our intern, Archit Suresh, who's sitting behind me as we're recording this podcast. Six underhand serving in Yaki Montez's. That's what he texted me as another example. That's pretty funny. Like, I would like to see six underhanded in Yaki Montez's and how they fare against any team in the country.
The only sad thing is they beat me. That's the saddest part.
That's not even an accomplishment. Come on, AARP, Chris. Yeah. Spot on with your analysis there. If you're a Virginia fan, welcome to the 2024 season, finally. Like I said it at the start, Chris Rodesh is not losing in straight sets to Cannon. Like that match is going three, and if it finishes, it's 4-3 someone. Von der Schulenburg, Anthrop looked like two of the top 20 players in the country. They were playing at four singles, Chris. And again, Iñaki Montez was serving underhand, and he's still alive against a JJ Tracy, who's a top 10 player in the country right now. Like, shout out to Tracy and Ty, who are scheming and doing a little bit of everything to try and make Iñaki uncomfortable. But man, like, Iñaki still hung tough, and he couldn't hit a serve. He could start to hit the overhead a little bit. And I kind of know the shoulder pain he's going through because it's the low to high that's clearly bothering him. When the elbow is already up, he can pronate through a little bit easier. It's the low to high. Dare I say I have that shoulder problem where it just feels like you're getting stabbed when you try and do that motion. And there's just, it's not a pleasant feeling. Virginia almost, like, they just needed to find a point to go their way. And it felt like they could never get easy momentum. Dietrich losing that second set, Von der Schulenburg losing their second set. There was just never a moment for Virginia to seize momentum, but they kept on fighting. Like, they never rolled over. And that's a testament to, again, the character of this team, a reflection of their coach, who, by the way, overruled his player in the deciding breaker in doubles. Like, what a moment. The last thing I'll say, ridiculous. And I'm not trying to make this a shot here, but like to end on the Montez overrule, like that's just brutal. It's just a brutal overrule to make on that far sideline. And Andreas was furious at the call, and like he just overruled this player 2 hours earlier. Like it sucks that that's how it had to end because God, was that match on three extraordinarily fun. But man, like this one had everything: drama, energy, intensity, and above all else, an extraordinary high level of tennis. Chris, any final thoughts on this match? Are you ready to move on to match two?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say I didn't think this was going to be my take coming out. And I think my take coming out of this, because I think both of these teams are great, is absolutely, I thought Ohio State would win here. I think they are going to, you know, I think they are the best team at this point in the season and indoors, and they win 4-0. And I can't help but say that my take coming out of this is I think I'm taking Virginia to win the national title in May if Montez is healthy. It's a big if, right? But if Montez has a shoulder and he's healthy, with what I saw from them today, I think I'm probably going to pick him again.
Kiefer and Dahlberg are always going to be better outdoors. Hopper Graziani obviously going to continue to have opportunities to work their way into the lineup, but 100%. Like, they had the Buckeyes. Like, this was a more competitive match than the Alabama match, I think, if truth be told, even though the scoreline for Alabama-Ohio State was closer than this scoreline ultimately ended. I agree with you in the sense that I think Virginia doesn't walk out of this feeling bad about their
prospects moving forward.
But 100% Buckeyes, they just looked the part today. They are through to their seventh final in program history, where a date with last year's NCAA semifinalists and the two-time reigning national indoor champions TCU awaits. Chris, again, another weird doubles point to kick off our semifinal. This one felt like it was all TCU, really, through the first 35 minutes. Certainly Louis Maxted, Duncan Chan, a top 25 team, even though they're playing three doubles in their lineup. Theirs was never in doubt. 6-3 win at the number three spot for TCU. You thought after they clinched that with Fernley and Pennington Jones being up a break pretty much from the start against Maroney and Thompson that, all right, TCU was going to take care of business at two. They're going to go up one love. They're going to, again, be the front runners we know that they can be against this Wake Forest roster. And yet, That was just anything but the case. A credit to Wake Forest. Coombs and Suresh, a top 10 team in the country by ranking right now. Another fantastic performance as they win their top 10 showdown 6-3 over Gorzny and Vivez. And then, man, Matthew Thompson. Chris Halioris is going to continue to underrate him in singles, never in the doubles point. If you listened to our preview yesterday, you heard him said he liked Wake Forest in doubles. Well, Chris Halioris, you were spot on in your analysis as Maroney and Thompson from a 4-3 breakdown, final three games of the match they take. It ends with the most brilliant backhand return I've seen all weekend. I've seen all season. I've seen in quite some time. Maroney had one spot he could hit to pass Jake Fernley at the net, and somehow he found it. And credit to whomever shared this detail with me. I don't remember. Oh, it was ITA CEO Tim Russell. I appreciate his sideline reporting for us. Maroney, after he hits the return of serve, Chris, kisses his racket because he knew that was a gift from the gods. And it absolutely was. One love lead for Wake Forest. Now, you predicted that yesterday, but I am curious, after that doubles point, first of all, your thoughts on how the rhythm went. Second of all, how concerned were you for TCU heading into singles?
I mean, I wasn't concerned at all. Look, that's exactly what we said yesterday. I felt like Wake would sneak that doubles out. They made it very interesting. That's my concerning point for TCU moving forward in doubles. It is the two spot, honestly. You know, and I'll be just as candid as JPJ is. I love your interviews with him. He is probably the most, you know, everybody gives some political.
It's the Brits. Yeah. The Brits are inherently just honest. They're candid. They're not going to.
Everybody gives some political BS in a post-match interview. And JPJ is 100% candid when he tells you, like, you ask him about the matchup with the ICs. He's like, well, I love the doubles point. Like,
yeah, that's so funny.
That was just classic. But my analysis is I don't love JPJ at doubles. Like, I mean, that's the problem. I have questions over that two dubs spot with Fernley and JPJ. And that's the one that ended up, you know, sort of costing them the doubles point. But was I concerned going into the singles? No, I still thought, as we said yesterday, that they were, you know, even if they drop the doubles, they're going to win four singles. That singles lineup is just too good. So, no, I wasn't overly concerned.
It's a terrible take by you. I think JPJ is going to be exceptional. Not exceptional. He's more than fine as a doubles piece. I love his backhand return of serve. Like, again, that ability to draw that ball across. He's playing the deuce side, so he's got to go inside out on that backhand. I think he's fine with it. I think when he connects on the forehand return, obviously there's plenty of pace. I think he's comfortable moving forward. Obviously, he and Fernley are more than comfortable taking some big cuts, certainly from the baseline, and that's what they want to do. They want to beat you down. They want to out-singles you right now on the doubles court, but there's just too much talent for Devin Bowen, David Roditi, who are both top 50 doubles players during their pro careers themselves, to work with at that two doubles spot for me to give up on it anytime soon. Now, again, back-to-back losses for them, definitive against A&M. Certainly felt like they let one get away from them here today against Wake Forest. But you're right. Like, as we moved towards singles, what was so amazing was that within 15 minutes, much like the Buckeyes yesterday against Harvard, within 15 minutes of singles, it was like, oh, all right, TCU is going to be just fine, because Burnley was up 4-1 in literally a snap of the finger. Who was the other lopsided? Gorzny was up 4-1.
Yeah.
Snap of the finger. Maxted was up 6-1 to love in legitimately 28 minutes.
Like, never lost an indoor match.
Was just never lost. Like, God, you know, I have some TCU takes from these first 6 weeks that have gotten me in trouble already. Let the record show, listeners. I got to throw some takes out there. Otherwise, this podcast is no fun. But, like, I know a guy, I'm not going to say it's me, but I know a guy who said, oh yeah, their biggest question marks are at 5 and 6. Like, I need to see them have success indoors before I believe it. It's like, Alex, you know, Louis Maxted's never lost an indoor match before. I now know that, obviously, but that was the most miraculous part, is how quickly they raced out to those first sets on 1-4 and 5. And look, a credit to freshman Luca Pau. He's real. For Wake Forest, another straight set win for him at the number 6 spot. Their one singles point put up on the board, and he was up 5-love pretty darn fast as well. But man, did TCU respond. You know, JPJ told us Roditi lit him up after the doubles, said it was unacceptable. We got to, you know, again, raise our level, raise our intensity. They did exactly that. And when Vivez takes a 6-4 set at 3 over Matt Thompson, then JPJ closing out that 7-5 set over DK Suresh, which, by the way, featured 5 consecutive breaks before a JPJ hold to close things out. 5 first sets for TCU. And in a match that really only featured 2 competitive singles battles, the number, 2 and 3 single spots, TCU was up in both of them by the time the match ended. They had already gotten the win, obviously, from JPJ before Gorzny ultimately provides the clinch at 4. The depth is real. The strength up top is real. Jake Fernley, Jake Fernley is now firmly ensconced in the guy conversation. Has to be. JPJ, though, this is my last take, Chris, and then I'm shutting up. It's all you the rest of the way. What's the difference between this TCU team and TCU teams of past? Well, first of all, they don't have Sander Jong or Luke Fumba, who are staples of our lives, certainly. We miss you, Landlord. We miss you, Luke. But they have some dog in them this season, Chris Halioris. JPJ, after every point, the finger was behind the ear saying, you know, what are we doing here? If we're... like Wake Forest bench, who's notoriously loud, notoriously doing all these different things. And like, I love that. I love the fact that he was looking to Luke Swan on the bench. Luke Swan for sure going to lose his voice by the time this weekend is over. I loved it. I loved the singles performance, everything I saw. Your thoughts, Chris Halioris?
Yeah, look, I think the thing that I couldn't have been more impressed with when we got into singles, yeah, like you mentioned, they were lopsided everywhere except for 2 matches. And that JPJ versus Suresh match, I made it clear last night that I was super impressed with DK Suresh. He's got such easy power. He generates so many free points. And what JPJ did to him, like you mentioned, all the breaks, which I would not have seen coming because Suresh gets so many easy points on his serve, is he just made him uncomfortable when he made he would make the returns and he would just put him back where he got him off balance. And that took away the ability for Suresh, who kind of, he needs that sort of position to lean in and generate that advantage that he has with his long fluid stroke. And he kind of dictates the point from there. But JPJ was putting the balls in the back corners and getting them on his back heel, hitting the ball. And if you put Suresh on his back heel, that takes away every bit of advantage that he has in his game. And he did it so amazingly well. I couldn't have been more impressed there. And yeah, it was unfortunate that we had so many lopsided matches both ways, right, on all the courts. Pow, so easy at 6, which might, you know, maybe that's a little concerning point for TCU over Yurashek going forward if they're not taking doubles points. I mean, look, tomorrow, that's a real concern. If they drop doubles and you give Bernie a win, that's a concerning part for TCU. But everywhere else, I mean, yeah, they look good, and I couldn't have been more impressed with the way they came out in singles.
The only pushback I would give, that was Yurasek's first stinker of the season. Like, he just didn't have it today. And he clinched yesterday. He clinched against Tennessee a couple of weeks ago. Like, he has been one of the reasons TCU has started this season undefeated. And despite losing Fumba, Sander Jong are right back to where they were throughout the course of last year. You're right, though. Like I said, this to end our broadcast. The only point where I feel confident one way is Alex Bernard at 6. And that has nothing to do with Yurasek and any doubt in him. It has everything to do. Did you hear our conversation? 6 Alex Bernards. Chris feels comfortable riding with that lineup against any team in the country and trying to figure out how he does. But man, like, I'll continue to say it. I don't think Gorzny's 15% of the player he'll end up being when it's all said and done, because you watch him swing and you're like, hey man, you know, like, how tall you are, how strong you are, how much more racket speed you could probably generate if you wanted to. And again, like, I wish you could give Seb Gorzny's size and Jake Fernley's twitchiness and just combine them into one player, because that guy's the number one player in the world. Like, that guy has all, and then maybe the dog of JPJ inside as well. You get, like, that is the perfect player combination there. And Look, even Pedro Vives, who hasn't been great indoors, to be up 6-4, 5-3 on a Matt Thompson, who is such a tough out indoors with the weapons he possesses. A guy might have said earlier this season on this show that he has TCU in a tier below Virginia, Florida. Florida. That's old school. That's a reflex, Chris, from the early 2020s.
Give us that rewind button, Westhoff.
Yeah. let's try that again. It's twice now. No, outside of Virginia, Texas, Ohio State, who were the clear-cut top three on paper to start the season. I thought there might be a delta, just given, again, I wanted to see Maxted, Jurecek kind of show their worth at that 5 and 6 spot. There is no delta. TCU's, you know, the delta actually might be between Ohio State, TCU, and everyone else, given where Virginia, Texas have been to start this season. But no, TCU was excellent. It's an unbelievable win. It's an 11th straight at the National Indoor Championships. They're going to play for a third consecutive title. Chris Heller, are you ready to hear the list of teams that have won three consecutive National Indoor titles? Stanford, Virginia. There's your list. Those are the only teams who have won three consecutive titles. TCU can add their name to that list with a victory tomorrow. And look, I want to set the scene for tomorrow's final in a second. But Chris Haliouris, both teams are fully healthy. Can Wake Forest beat Virginia in a given ACC regular season or conference tournament match? Do you believe that much more in the Deacs following their run here this past weekend?
No and yes. Like, I know they're not beating Virginia if they're both healthy. But yes, I actually do believe that much more in the Deacs. I mean, from what I saw from them this weekend, I needed to see something. And I told you yesterday, this was going to be the first time they played one of these sort of top tier teams. And I wanted to see what they came out with at the bottom of the lineup. And the way Luca Pau looked told me that at least Luca Pau, if not Taki, is going to be able to compete down there. And maybe it was just a bad match for Taki, but as good as Pau looked, that tells me they can compete at the bottom of the lineup. So yeah, I think Wake Forest can compete. I just still think Virginia, with a fully healthy Virginia and that top four that they have and what they're going to have in doubles, is it's just not touchable in the ACC. I don't see them dropping an ACC match.
Yeah, I get why. I mean, first of all, Montez, Rodesh, they haven't lost an ACC match. Kiefer, Von der Schulenburg, don't worry, I didn't forget about you guys. I know all four seniors, and they get mad when you don't say all four. So again, it's a reflex that's been built up over the years. I don't know if I agree with you, and it's not because I have any doubts about Virginia. It's because I really do believe in this Wake Forest team. Taki clearly is going to run a little hot and cold, but the weapons he has are real. I mean, no one has earned more clout over the course of the past weekend than DK Suresh, who, coming from the NAIA, Georgia Gwinnett, like, man, every coach must feel like they whiffed massively in not adding him to their roster. The size, the length, the speed, the weapons, the fact that sometimes he drives through the backhand maybe better than his forehand, even though he seems so determined to hit slices on that backhand wing at times. And yet, for a guy his size, like, oh my God, he moves extraordinarily well. And so I continue to be thoroughly impressed by everything we saw from him. Coons is not going to be handed a loss like that at 5 with much frequency. And, you know, again, I think this was a particularly poor matchup for him, given the aggression of Maxted. Like, how would he face against a Kiefer, a Dahlberg, or a Virginia team still trying to figure out who belongs where at those 5 and 6 spots? I'm a believer. Like, I do, you know, again, Maroney, good, not great at the one spot. Obviously, you'd have to lean Rodesh there if we're doing the hypothetical matchup. Here's what I'm saying is Wake Forest is a top 8 seed. Like, they are in the outskirts of the inner conversation, which most top 8 teams probably figure themselves to be.
Yeah, I think they're definitely in that, you know, there's that top 4 group. And then I think they're in that conversation of the next 4 that are going to be able to challenge for a top 8 seed. Absolutely. I think your point is valid. They will be able to, with what they showed today, I think they can battle Virginia at the 5-6 spots. I think Virginia is just too good in the top 4 for the rest of the ACC. And that's the separator for me. Again, all predicated on a 100% healthy Inyaki Montez, which remains to be seen.
Let's go to a tiebreaker here. Intern Archit Suresh is with me here in our studio at the Milstein Family Tennis Center. Archit, Wake Forest, Virginia. Let's say it's in Winston-Salem. I'll go check the schedule in a moment. You think Wake Forest can win that match?
Well, I think they certainly can. I think it's just more so, well, first of all, I want to know, is Inyaki serving in this or is he serving underhanded? If we're saying it's Inyaki serving underhanded as it is, then I think Wake Forest can definitely take that. I just think at some point, Virginia just has the juice at the top of the lineup, whether it's Rodesh, who I wouldn't pick Rodesh to lose at all. He's firmly at the top of my the guy list. Rodesh is the guy. He's winning at one. I think, again, it kind of just depends. I think I'd pick Dietrich. I'd never pick against Von der Schulenburg. And I just think Virginia would find a way at the bottom of the lineup, even if they lost a couple points. Wake Forest would definitely need doubles in that case for me. Let me help you out here, Archit.
This match happens in 12 days from now. 12 days from now, that match, and it's in Charlottesville. So in 12 days, I don't think we're going to see an Inyaki fully serving overhead.
I think that's a fair assumption to make. Chris pointing out that in 12 days, Archit can't hear Chris for our listeners. That's why I'm repeating myself. They play in 12 days. It's in Charlottesville. Unlikely Inyaki can serve overhead.
Yeah, unlikely Inyaki. I might pick Wake Forest in that one, though.
Ooh, Archit Suresh again. And no relation. Let the record show. Best joke.
Come on.
Says,
he's like a 43rd cousin, and that's why he's doing it. But regardless.
I just want you to know that the best joke made today was Archit walks in. He goes, God damn it. I'm like, what? He's like, I'm not even the best Suresh in the building today. And I was like, that's pretty funny. I was like, you have my attention. This is why we keep him around.
That's pretty much the answer when you walk into any building with any Indian people in it, Archit.
10 minutes away from where I live.
Yeah.
So I'm not even the best Suresh in my home state.
Some would argue maybe. Again, the scholars are discussing who's the top Suresh in the state of Georgia. Appreciate you tuning in, Archit. I'm going to come to you again at the end for a prediction for the final. But Chris Halioris, like I do think, again, Wake Forest certainly in the inner – not in the inner circle, but on the top eight radar in a way they just weren't prior to the start of these national indoor championships. That said, it's a dream final. It's an NCAA semifinal rematch. By the way, a match that got a little chippy between Ohio State and TCU last season. And look, I'm going to make this rant repeatedly on the broadcast, so I'll try not to do it with too much depth and too annoyingly here, but there's a lot of similarities, between where these two programs are right now and what they mean to the broader college tennis landscape. On the one side of the equation, obviously, you have an Ohio State squad that's done everything but win an NCAA title, two-time national indoor champions, countless national champions in singles, doubles produced from the program at various NCAA and ITA events. They've also been a staple of top five success. I've said it before, I'll say it again. They are the litmus test of good versus great in college tennis. You can't beat Ohio State, you're only in the good category. If you somehow manage to beat the Buckeyes, your team has to be considered great moving forward. On the flip side, it's a little bit more recent, but it's 10 consecutive top 10 finishes for head coach David Roditi and the TCU Horned Frogs. They are in a third consecutive national indoor final, looking to be just the second program to win three straight national indoor titles. And again, a program that's done everything but. Like, they've produced top professionals in Cam Norrie, others out in the pro tennis world. They've had players make deep runs at national collegiate events, whether it be singles, doubles, et cetera. Obviously, Roditi's ability to recruit, exceptional as well. It's a really good match, Chris. Before we start breaking down match calculus, which I want to get from you, I'm curious your read on this one, where these two programs sit, how excited you are for the podcast. For the final.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the final we all wanted to see. I'm super pumped. Two-time defending champ TCU facing what I think has to be the favorite in Ohio State. They're the top seeds. They come in much like they have been, you know, in past years. It's going to be a great match. I'm really looking forward to seeing the doubles. I'll say this. I think doubles will come down to that two spot. I think the Kingsley Tracy, assuming that Ohio State rolls out the same doubles. I have no doubt TCU's going the same. Ohio State has options. I assume they'll still roll Kingsley Tracy at two and probably Cash and Bernard at three. If that happens, I think that two doubles match is probably the swing match. And I just got to like Ohio State in doubles. They've, even though they struggled their first couple matches, they're so good at double. Those to me were aberrations. They're so good at dubs. I got to like them there. And then we'll just get rolling into the singles.
Well, look, again, to hear JPJ so bluntly and honestly be like, God, it would be really nice if we
got
doubles.
Even he knows they're the underdog in doubles.
That was delightful, but neither team's playing well in doubles right now. Like, I think that's safe to say. And there's just too much talent, too many pieces. And then, by the way, the added dynamic of it's a national final. Where are the nerves for each of these teams? How does that factor into what we see unfold through the first hour of play, as the doubles point can sometimes carry into? You're taking Buckeyes in the doubles, Arch, and I'm getting predictions from you from every category as well. Who are you taking in the doubles?
Well, I can't pick against the Buckeyes to lose three doubles points in one tournament. So I'm going to go with Ohio State, even though I think the doubles points more important for TCU in this one.
Got it. Look at our young man growing up. That analysis is so much better than the shit gave us in Orlando, Chris. Like, we got an intern on the rise here. I'm really impressed. I love that answer. Spot on, my friend. Spot on. I got nothing to add to it. Let's go through all the singles positions, Chris. Number one spot, juicy. It's Fernley versus Kingsley. What do we got? Where are you leaning?
I mean, this is a three set battle. And I mean, unless the match comes down to 4-3, or they actually could. I mean, maybe I'm trying to think if it's not 4-3, like who's going to be. I mean, there are definitely guys, neither of these guys are soft. So there are definitely guys that might play longer points than them. And so this could finish in three, even in a match that doesn't go 4-3. But I think if I have to play it out, I think I'm going to take Fernley.
Archit?
I'm going to lean Kingsley just off the form I saw a few days ago. He put on a clinic the other night, but honestly, I'm 50-50 on that one, but I'm going to lean Kingsley, even though I think Fernley has literally everything it takes to win that match.
It's going to be
this is awesome. For the record, Archit cannot hear me at all, right?
He can't hear you at all. That is
so his takes have nothing to do with what I've said. So this is great. All right.
Have absolutely zero to do with what you say. That's why they're so funny to me. That's why I'm the only person who gets to hear both. And I'm enjoying it. Me and the listeners. So again,
this is great.
I'm praying he wants to know who you picked. I'm not even going to tell him. He'll have to listen to the podcast to find out. That's the work we make our interns do.
Oh.
I'm hoping there's going to be a take where you guys like repeat each other verbatim. And that's when you're just going to hear me start dying with laughter. Anyway, he's leaning Kingsley. Chris Halliwurst leaning relatively unfinished, unless this comes down to a 4-3 thriller. I would just point out, and we haven't talked about it enough, Kingsley's playing at home. He's in New York for the first time. He's talked to me about how much that means to him to finally have a chance to easily play in front of his family. It's a really good match at one. How about court number two, Chris Halliwurst? JPJ versus Boulay. It feels like that one might be a must for TCU.
I mean, it feels that way. And I'll say this. I'm going to lean JPJ, but now I've leaned TCU in both of them. And I don't think TCU sweeps the top two. I think they split, but I will. So I'm going to come out of here in my calculus. I'll say they split the top two. But I like JPJ better here. And if I think they end up splitting, then I'll say it's probably JPJ here and Kingsley at one. But either of these two matches, I think, can go either way. They're both ridiculously close.
Good prediction by you, Archit Suresh.
Well, I didn't know we were allowed to lean unfinished and cop out on predictions here. But first of all, may I just say, does Boulay not look like if Dennis Shapovalov was just coached by Ty Tucker?
Okay. No, but yes, I see what you're saying. That's funny. That's very funny.
Okay. More specifically, this might be my favorite match on the board. Both these guys can put up electrifying tennis. I'm going to lean JPJ just because it feels like TCU needs that one, but I think he's just going to bring the fire in that specific moment.
Fair enough. Again, Chris Haley was predicting a split of the top two. Archie a little bit more comfortable riding with JPJ. Court number three, Tracy taking on Vivez. Chris Haliouris, your thoughts on that one?
This is all JJ here. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this one. To use a line that was quoted as needs to be a drinking game when Gruskin says it in the chat. But yeah, no ifs, ands, or buts. JJ Tracy. I mean, Vivez just it's not his preferred surface. JJ's looked awesome. He's got to be the heavy favorite coming into this one.
Archit Suresh.
Well, you guys have talked about this at length, but I've just been so impressed with how JJ Tracy has looked at this tournament and just how he looks at during this period of time in the gear. As much as I think Vivez has the talent to beat him, and he's certainly shown it with his fall results and pro results from previously, I'm not picking against Tracy here. I'm going to lead JJ Tracy.
I have no problem with the reasoning from either of you. Obviously, I've been the first to beat the drum. Vivez showed me something today, and it's a little slower here in Colombia than it is over in Flushing. It's going to be a good match. Like, I get it. Again, Tracy indoors, we've just seen him win this match, it feels like, so many times, but I'm excited for that one. Number four singles position, Gorzny taking on Anthrop. Do we need to play any other match in the building tomorrow? Like, I might like that one more than JPJ Boulay, more than anything we've discussed thus far. Just fascinating talents. Two guys I'm sure know each other's games pretty well, as they were both pretty successful juniors during their time. Chris Haliouris, which way are you leaning?
Yeah, this is, to me, is the epitome of that 50-50 match. I mean, these guys have both looked great. Look, I'm already at... I'm at three for Ohio State, and I finally want to see a 4-3 match. And we all know, given everything I've said so far, that I'm taking Bernie at six. So it's already over. I'm taking Ohio State. So to get the 4-3, I have to say that it's Gorzny here. I honestly have no clue, but there's a little more experience, I think, on the Gorzny side there. I would go like 51% Gorzny and 49% Anthrop. This is going to be a great match. I'll be shocked if this is not a three setter here. And I'll say I'll give the edge to Gorzny.
Archit Suresh.
Well, I like the weapons of Anthrop more in this one. I genuinely believe that serve forehand combination can take him to a win, but I think I like the totality of things that Gorzny does better on a court. And like, he's just such a fun athlete to watch. He's so fluid for his size, and like, he's so lengthy. Just like, I'm going to go Gorzny because I feel like this is one they're going to need. Gorzny, JPJ, to me, are the ones that I feel most confident in picking TCU in the singles.
Archit leaning on the TCU sophomores. So again, two guys who can do a lot of things. That's going to be a really fun match. Two guys, by the way, with serious pro upside as well. So we'll keep our eyes on that four spot. Number five, I just want to remind everyone, I was there for the 2012 National Indoors in person, calling the event semifinals. Ohio State played TCU. The match swung entirely in a matchup between Louis Maxted and Robert Cash at the number six singles position. Cash was out in front, had four breakpoint chances to give himself a chance to serve for the first set. He had a forehand on top of the net that he missed into the net. I've told this story before. Crow lets off a healthy F-bomb because he knew that was their moment. Maxted pulls away from there in what was ultimately a victory for TCU. Now we're 2 years later, but we get a rematch between the two. And again, Louis Maxted has never lost a match inside. Obviously, Robert Cash has lost, what, one indoor match over the past 2.5 years? Something crazy like that. Chris Haliouris, your read on the number five singles position.
Yeah, this is another really fun one. We all know how good Robbie Cash is, especially indoors, but he's just good, period. He's going to put pressure on Maxted. He's not going to sit back there and rally with him. Maxted's never lost a match indoors. It's going to be really fun, I think. I feel like you got to give that edge to Maxted potentially, but you know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, no, I think Cash remembers that match. And I'm gonna say that Robbie Cash delivers Louis Maxted his first loss indoors.
It's a bold pick by Chris Haliores. What say you, Archit Suresh?
Well, I'm going to lean Robbie Cash in this one, but you said it, Max. Oh, sorry. Max said doesn't lose indoors. Cash also doesn't lose indoors. I just like the weapons of Cash a little bit more. I think he's feeling a little more confident based off the two matches that I've seen from him. I'm going to lean Cash.
Agreement between our two analysts here today. And then last, but certainly not least, six singles we kind of already talked about, so I'm not even going to throw it to you guys. Like, Bernie's lost seven games in three matches. There is a pathway always for Tomas Jiříšek. Do not write him off. In fact, when you write him off, I would argue, is when he's at his most dangerous. By the way, he turned in his stinker for the weekend today, so I think there's only going to be improvement from him from a level perspective. But look, obviously at six, Bernie is the biggest difference maker right now. He is the most outstanding player on this Buckeyes roster, the difference between him and everyone else. So with that said, final words belong to you, Chris Haliores. Give me your prediction on how this one shakes out, your final read on tomorrow's National Indoor Final.
I'm going to say that if we're going to get the 4-3 that we finally want to see, I think TCU has to win doubles. I don't think it happens, and I'm going 4-2 Ohio State.
4-2 Ohio State, the pick from Chris. Archit Suresh, your pick?
Well, we're in agreement once again, because I was also going to go 4-2 Ohio State. I just think they're going to get off on the right foot, probably take doubles, and I just think they have too much depth across the lineup for TCU to really hang with for much longer than what they can.
Well, when Coach Rodini knocks over our cameras tomorrow, we'll know why. It's because both of you predicting against his Horned Frogs.
And Gruskin copping out on a prediction because he's doing the broadcast.
Oh, you mean being extraordinarily professional? You know what you just did, Archit? You just gave me an excuse to unplug your microphone. So thank you for that. I was looking forward to doing so. Anyways, no, it's going to be a fantastic tennis match. And obviously, we are looking forward to presenting it to all of you college tennis fans at home. Coverage kicks off 12 p.m. Eastern time on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel will be myself, Mike Cation, on the call one last time. As again, we enjoyed the celebration of what has been an outstanding weekend of play, the National Indoor Championship. Monday, noon Eastern time, Ohio State versus TCU. That said, that'll do it. It went far over today's podcast than I expected. I know, Chris Haliores, you got to go celebrate a birthday, a happy birthday to your oldest daughter, whom we all love dearly here at Cracked Rackets. And, you know, again, please do send my love as always. A thank you to you. A thank you, of course, to our CR intern, Archit Suresh. Sincerely, all the additional angles, the enhanced broadcast features of our Cracked Rackets display here during these National Indoors wouldn't happen without his tireless effort. So shout out to you, Archit. You're the man. And thank you, as always, for taking the time to join us on the show. And then, of course, last but not least, shout out, as always, to the super producer, Daniel Westa, for the of an any job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. That said, that'll do it for our semifinal recap finals preview show for the fantastic Chris Haliores, our intern Archit Suresh, our super producer Daniel Westhoff, and from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. Chris, Archit, what do we tell our listeners?
Hey.
Great shot.
Great shot.
They tried. We're leaving that in for sure.
We tried to sync with Archit. That was off. That was horrible.
The problem is when you try to sync, it never goes well, so I'll leave it for you. You know what we say. Hey. Great shot, and we will see you all next time. Thanks, everyone.